so I would like to get to it. And I won't, I think we did have a quorum with all the people that walked in and walked out. So I'm assuming we do have a quorum and we're going to go ahead here. Because we had several members who have come and gone for one reason or another. Oh, and there's Representative Dorn. He is here. And there's Representative Johnson. She is here. All right. So we're in good shape. And Biskins was in here and is in the hall. So we have a quorum. So we will move ahead. Representative Erdahl. I would move House File 2881 before the committee for possible consideration for the omnibus bill. Would you go ahead with your bill, please?
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon. I see the committee getting younger.
Younger?
I see the young member down there.
Well, you know, we're trying to have an average age of about 30 here.
I've heard she votes better than Representative Heidgarten.
I believe that.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Representative
All right.
Erdahl.
Members, this bill was brought to me by a superintendent of schools from my district. There are some similarities to a plan that Governor Plante's administrative district proposal brought out last year. Now, under current statute, all Minnesota school districts are required to have a superintendent. The sharing of superintendents is permitted under the statute. For a couple of reasons, voluntary sharing of superintendents in some districts makes sense. First of all, it has obvious financial benefits. Two, three, four districts sharing one superintendent is cheaper for each of the districts. Small districts often struggle financially and are aided in this bill with a $30,000 annual appropriation. A second reason for sharing is that the job of superintendent has changed over the years. When I began teaching a few years ago, there were no computers. The superintendent acted as a business manager, lunch program director, head contract negotiator, curriculum director, technology director, and many other responsibilities that are now taken up by others. The superintendent now has a prime responsibility to coordinate others in these positions that previously were in his or her purview. In some districts, it might make sense to allow districts to share one superintendent who could coordinate multiple districts. This is currently happening in 28 Minnesota school districts. There are two sets of four and 20 paired school districts with superintendents. We estimate that this bill would maybe encourage another 15 to 20. At $30,000 annually, if we assume 45 school districts, it would cost about $1.35 million each year to do this. It would lead to greater efficiency, better use of manpower, and save money for districts that are most likely small and would benefit from these factors. Now, Chairman?
Representative Erdahl, so the $30,000 number that's in your bill would only be for one district that shared a superintendent?
No, it would be for each of the districts that are sharing. If two districts are sharing, it would be $30,000 for each.
And how much was the estimate for the total cost?
About $1.35 million.
Representative Erdahl, if when they share, don't they save money when they share?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, they would be, okay, let's say you got two school districts.
Right.
They're each paying their superintendent $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have one superintendent, you could still, you know, pay that superintendent, they could share the $100,000, so it's $50,000 each, but they're getting $30,000 each, so now it's less cost. They're saving money.
Well, it seems to me that the district is saving money. The state certainly isn't saving money.
That's
correct. Are you following my...
No, that's, yeah, I never did say the state was saving money. What it does... is it frees up more money in those districts to be used for other things. You could, a district could hire two more teachers, for example.
All right, questions from members. No questions from members? All right, I think your bill is very straightforward, Representative Erdahl, and it will be laid over for possible consideration.
Likely? What was it? Likely?
Possible.
Well, thank you for your consideration. Appreciate it.
You bet. There is a question. Representative Clinton.
Okay. Representative Erdahl, given that this could reduce the number of superintendents in the state, does the Superintendents Association have a position on this?
Gee, I don't know.
What was that?
But, you know, again, the suggestion did come to me from a superintendent. And we do have, I mean, this provision does exist, where we do have 28 school districts in Minnesota who are currently doing it. What this simply does is offer an incentive for others who may like to do the same thing and you know, could benefit from the extra money, which, again, would enable them to hire more teachers or more classroom monies or whatever.
Representative Erdahl, do any of the districts you represent currently share a superintendent?
None. None of the districts that I represent.
Okay. I just wondered how it works, you know, if it works well when they do share one.
That may, you know, frankly, I received a notice yesterday that this would be coming up today. And at another time, I would bring in superintendents and bring in other people. I did talk to the superintendent last night who had brought this to me. He's actually at the school board or the superintendent's convention this afternoon giving a speech about this same time. So he was not able to come here. But in the off chance that this doesn't happen this year, maybe worthwhile to have a more complete discussion of this at another time, bringing in some of these districts and how it's working and some superintendents.
All right, thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Is Representative Gazelka here yet, or Ellison? All right, I know that the people, I believe, are here for my bill still, right? I see you. Okay, we're going to go ahead with that. As long as... Uh-oh, Mr. Demmer isn't here. Representative Clinton, would you care to have the gavel while I have bill heard? I'd like to introduce, first of all, my bill, House File 3121. I would like to move it before the committee for possible consideration. And this is regarding an issue that came to my attention actually when I was called by somebody affiliated with a charter school in, not in my area, but near my area. And what happened, I don't think most of us have thought too much about it, but when we had the budget crunch, we eliminated charter school startup aid for some schools, for schools that started up during that period of time. And so what some of these schools went into their year thinking they had aid coming and then finding out they weren't going to get startup aid. And so what I was looking at was how much would that be, and the estimates from the department is that it comes to about $1.518 million, 90% of which would be paid out in 06 and 10% in 07. And that would restore the charter school aid for just schools that started up in 05. The glitch is that even though they are now eligible, they would be eligible for it, we had session law from 05 that was still on the books, 04, 05 session law, that made it made them unable to receive that aid. So what we're trying to do here is correct that, and if the committee thinks that it is just, that then they would receive the startup aid they should have had. And there is a list, I believe, in your packet of school districts, not school districts, charter schools, that started in 05 and inadvertently did not get the aid that they would have normally gotten. So you can see what they are and how much the 90% would be if paid to them in 06. Now the totals here look a little different than what I was... No, they are right. Because with 10% being paid, like we do everything else, 90%, 10%, with 10% being paid in 07, these are the correct numbers. So what I would like to introduce you to today is, I don't know if most of you realize, we've talked a lot about the Purpich Center for the Arts, but there is a charter school for the arts in the Hopkins area, and there is a, well, I will let them tell you about it, actually. I think that might make sense. And we have here Mr. Pirro, and Karen Charles, you are the superintendent of the school, right? And Mr. Pirro, what do you
think? I'm a parent.
You're
a
parent.
And a board chair.
And a board chair. Well.
Okay. Mr. Pirro, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Would you like to start your testimony now?
Well, I'm going to let Karen start.
Okay. Karen, what's your last name again?
Charles. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm Karen Charles, and I am the superintendent slash principal slash director of the Main Street School of Performing Arts. And as Barbara mentioned, we are the first grade 9 through 12 performing arts high school in the Twin Cities area. The Purpich Arts High School is for grades 11 and 12 only, and that's kind of how we came into being. We started planning for the school in 2003-2004. I worked with the board of directors to help develop the curriculum, staff the program, and renovate a school building that we now occupy on Main Street, the old John Ireland Catholic School in Hopkins. And we had anticipated the start of aid, and as was mentioned, suddenly it was not there anymore. As you know, we had 100 plus students enrolled. We opened with 100 students in grades 9 and 10, 108 to be exact. And this year we've seen a 53% increase in enrollment. We have 165 students in grades 9, 10, and 11 this year. And we will graduate our first class next fall. The loss of those funds, though, however, did impact us. We had a building to renovate. There are some very specific spaces necessary for students to adequately pursue their arts in music, dance, and theater. And also, being a high school, there are some state requirements in terms of curriculum, one being a chemistry lab, which cost us $60,000, which we wanted to implement. We have, though, successfully moved ahead, and as I mentioned, increased our enrollment significantly. We phased in an advanced placement program this year. Next fall, we plan to be the first school in the Twin Cities to offer AP Music Theory to students, and we're pretty excited about that. But this money would help us not be in the red, honestly, for this coming year, which is where we want to be.
Can you explain a little bit about how you work with this theater?
Oh, yes, and I can explain a little bit. We have partnerships, one significant partnership with Stages Theater Company, which is in the Hopkins district. They were one of the founding organizations that helped develop our theater program. We work with them, teaching artists come in to work with our students. They support us in the production of all of our performances in all three art areas, music, dance, and theater. And they have also helped with the technical aspect, which we don't have any capability to do any of the technical work for our shows as well.
Thank you, Ms. Charles. I think we'll hear from the other testifier first and then see if there's any questions. Mr. Favor.
Sure. As a parent, the chemistry lab was very important to me, as are the advanced placement classes. The feedback that I've gotten from the other parents are those are the things that we really needed, so we went ahead and did those things, and that has gotten us into the statutory operating debt situation that we are in. And with this funding, we wouldn't have been in that situation. So we're progressive, we're moving ahead, but definitely those startup funds that were planned to be part of our budget are definitely needed for the school to continue offering these above-caliber things for our students.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Stages is a theater that exists on the main street of Hopkins, and it has a lot of wonderful children's plays. And so I take my grandchildren to the children's plays there. And remember, Representative Heidgerken, you said, why can't the Perfect Center for the Arts be a charter school? Well, here is an example of an arts charter school that you might want to kind of explore and see what they do. So I really feel that it's pretty hard when you start thinking you're going to get $50,000 or whatever it is, and then you end up just not getting it. And that was because of our budget situation. And it's one of the small things that I think is kind of an unfairness that I would like to see us maybe fix this year, assuming that we get a target budget, et cetera, which is not a given at this point in time.
Thank you, Representative Sephora. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, thank you for your comments, Representative Chair Sephora. I agree. This is the first time you probably ever hear me say anything good about a charter school, but I think it's I'm not a believer in charter schools, but I believe this is a fairness issue. So I think you get a very good cause here. So thank you.
Representative, anybody else with a question for the testifiers? Representative Eric.
Thank you, Chair Klinzing. Representative Heidgerken, this is sponsored by the Hopkins School District.
Representative Dorn, did you have a question?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I might have brushed the microphone or something.
That's fine. So, Representative Sephora, do you have any closing comments?
No, just that I think what they do is good. And obviously, we have many students in the state who are interested in it. I know from the district that I represent, let's just say the whole third district, the way the Purpich Art School takes students is they take so many from each congressional district. And there are always many more students from the area I represent than can ever get accepted into that school. And I think this is a wonderful alternative for them. I don't know at this point whether it's better than Purpich or worse than Purpich or what it may be, but it sounds like they are really on the right track and providing a good rigorous academic program for the students, and I'm 100% behind that, and I would like to see us fix this little injustice.
Oh,
you know how I am about fairness.
Thank you. With Representative Heidgerken on board for a charter school initiative, we'll definitely consider this for our omnibus bill coming out of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 2430 be before the committee for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Klinzing. Representative Ellison, your bill is very short. Would you like to explain your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. First of all, good afternoon, committee members. I actually had contacted a testifier from Summit Academy, and they're on their way here. They had some meetings on the way. Hopefully they'll be here soon. But I am feel pretty capable of explaining it all, so why don't I just lay it out to you?
Okay, why don't we let you go ahead and explain it, and they can always add to whatever you've had to say.
All right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, I think it's first of all most important to say that this bill would help support a program that will increase graduation rates through the collaboration of North High School and the Summit Academy OIC. The program's called the Quantum Opportunities Program, and what it does is that it tracks students who have grade point averages below 2.0, and this is based on research which indicates that these are the students most likely to drop out of high school. Now, in North Minneapolis, we see rates of high school dropout, which are truly, truly remarkable and very, very sad. We have graduation rate, high school dropout rates, particularly for black students, that are absolutely abysmal. And this is a pressing situation. And so what the Quantum Opportunities Program does is it has a location in North High School, and North High School has a designated room. I was fortunate to visit the room, the facility, just last week, and what we saw is students coming in who are tracked because of the low graduation rate they have, and many of them come into high school with skills far below what's necessary to graduate from high school. They come in, and then they are given special attention on their on the things that they're particularly weak on. Now they have an arrangement through a computer program which shows the tutor exactly what the test scores of the students are. So if the student is particularly failing in math or whatever course it is, they can work specifically on that skill set to raise that student's grade. They've had some significant improvements of students. Students are doing much better. The program used to be spread out around different local sites in North Minneapolis, but what they did is they consolidated it into North High School so that they could have greater consistency, greater accountability. And so it's a program, my testifier would be here with the numbers and the exact statistics, but I can tell you that we have graduation rates, which are dropout rates among this segment of students, which are well over 50%. The students who start high school don't graduate. Actually, it's probably more than that. The number that pops in my mind is about 43% is the number that graduate. And this can all well be tracked by the low grade point averages at the early grades. And so what we're trying to do is impact this problem. And so we need some support to do it. These particular students come from families that have all the usual problems that I don't have to elaborate with you on. You know, high rates of mobility, parents who have significant barriers to education, and the whole panoply of problems. And so we are asking for your support for this program. But I tell you, I visited last week, and I thought that it was a remarkable program, and it is working on the problem. So I'll stand for questions.
Madam Chair, I don't have a question per se, but I just also, especially if the testifier not here, I just want to say I hugely support this program, that they're working with a population of students who oftentimes have the largest struggles that we could possibly imagine. But this program focuses on the one thing that can really get those students onto a better track for their future, and that is education and making sure they have the academic skills to get that job later on down the road. In fact, Summit Academy trains kids even after graduation in job training programs, and so this is a comprehensive approach for these kids, and they started going down to the high schools and middle schools to offer them the Quantum Opportunities program because they realized that the people they were getting in their job training programs needed some more help with tutoring and academic skills before the job training. So it's a real comprehensive approach from a real dedicated bunch of people with that one goal of getting these kids jobs and a good education. And if you guys are all invited as legislators next Friday morning, Representative Ellison and I are hosting an open house at Summit Academy, so you can come and see a special program they offer called 100 Hard Hats, where they train the students who wouldn't otherwise probably get job training to go into the construction trades.
Couldn't have said it better, Madam Chair. But I just want to just let you know that we're talking about a community where one-third of all African-American children are in poverty, below the poverty guideline.
One-third?
One-third. And 15% unemployment. You know, there's a lot of unemployment is people who apply who are still getting unemployment benefits. There's a lot of people who are just structurally unemployed, hanging out on the streets. So this is, I think, doing something about the problem. And it's a no-nonsense approach, and it's comprehensive, and it starts early, as Representative Clinton pointed out.
Is a lot of this done on on-site at North High?
Yeah, they go to the students at the high school who are failing. But Summit Academy is about a mile away from North High School, but
okay.
They come in because they don't want to. They want to get as close to the kids as they can.
Does North High still have an emphasis on media? Is that still kind of their focus as a high school?
Their flagship program is something they call the Sumatech program. But that's actually a good, strong program. The problem is that only about 10% of the kids are in that program, and the rest of them are in the regular program, and they have a whole lot of, they have the issues that we're here talking about today. So they're known for their Sumatech program, trying to focus on math and technology for kids. But many of the kids still, are struggling. And again, I don't think that society can solve every problem. But one thing we can do is we can try to make sure kids succeed academically. So,
Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Ellison, for bringing this forth. Just as we were mentioning North High, I was out there last year, and we have a milk program going in the state of Minnesota. They have turned their vending machines off, and they got a lot of milk machines in there, and various varieties, and it's really worked out very well there. But going back to Summit, I did have an extended visit with the folks from Summit this year and last year, and it's something that Representative Dabney and I had some extended discussions this summer on. We used to put a lot of money into vocational to the secondary level, and that funding source has been cut. And because of that, we've had not only in the inner city and the outskate as well, we have the same problems, is that we've seen a lot less students sign up or less courses available for them, whether it be industrial arts, auto mechanics, or whatever. And because of that, we're finding a lot of students not picking up an interest. And what I like about the school or Summit, that they pick up an interest. They find something that they have a passion for. And it's in skills that we really, really need that so often are neglected within our high school systems today. You go to the average high school, you can't take in those industrial arts class anymore, or an auto mechanics or diesel mechanic or whatever. If they're not exposed to it, they're not going to get there. But Summit is a good example of how it can work, and your graduation rates go up with it and everything else. I was well pleased with the presentation given to me in the class in my office. So thank you for bringing it forth.
Well, thank you for making that observation. I agree with everything you said.
Representative Jenner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize if this has already been said, but Representative Ellison, how many kids are in the Summit Academy? How many kids are being affected by this?
You know what, Representative Dimmer, I got to tell you that that's the kind of information I was going to rely on my testifier for. There's a significant number of kids. It's in the 100 range.
Okay.
But I will supply that information as soon as possible.
Madam Chair, Representative Ellison, if it's about 100, that's where it's close enough. I don't need the exact.
Okay.
I just didn't know if we were talking 30 or 300. So if you say it's about 100, that's good.
Yeah. And I do think the committee should have that information. And they would have it if under ordinary circumstances. But thank you for the question.
I think Representative Clensing might be able to throw some light on this.
Well, I just want to say to that point that the person who runs Summit Academy will be here next week too with another bill that I'm carrying. And so we'll make sure that any questions like that he'll be able to answer at that point. So because he's probably would have been here today, but he's out of town.
All right, Representative Biskins. Representative Eric, did you stick a finger in the air, or what did you do over there?
Madam Chair, thank you. I typically, if I'm wondering how to vote, I just do one finger up in the wind to see which way it's going. All right. Madam Chair, I guess
I thought you always looked at John.
Well, I do. Madam Chair, I guess if I have the opportunity, thank you. I just want to say that I'm familiar with the work of Mr. King and Summit Academy. You know, I think what he does is tremendous, working with some of the poorest of the poor. I was struck and very pleased to see Representative Ellison, and I agree on one thing, and that's that government can't solve every problem. All right, we're right there together. And I think we also agree on the issue that government should be a safety net for some of the poorest of the poor. I don't know a single taxpayer in the state of Minnesota who has a problem paying their fair share when it goes out to help people at the very lowest level. And that's what this proposal is meant to do. It's one I applaud and one I support, and it's one that Mr. King is passionate about, and I thank Representative Ellison for bringing this bill forward.
All right, thank you. Representative Erickson. All right, I have no other people on the list, but I have a question. You mentioned about partners that work in the job training with you. Who are some of those partners?
Well, the Summit Academy brings in a whole group of people in the building trades, and the partners were people in the faith-based were the people in the faith-based community. Originally, the program was not located only in North High. You had one of the several churches in the North community area, and quite frankly, Ms. Chair, I can't even list the names of each church, but I can tell you that it was a multi. They had different faith-based groups that were doing this as a collaboration, but they just found that it was easier to pull it all into the high school. So they still partner with the churches in the community, but they no longer cite the program there. So.
Okay. I was thinking in terms of the people who, you know, prepared them for work, the job stuff. I was kind of curious about that.
Well, that's something that Summit Academy does through their own job training programs.
Okay.
They have a facility on Highway 55 in North Minneapolis, and they pull in people from various facts of life. I know Dunwoody does work through as a partner, collaborative partner of theirs. I know they have people through the building trade that work there. I know that they have... And so those are two that I'm quite aware of, but the list, I wish I could have a list for you, but I really don't.
Oh, that's all right. I just thought you might be able to shed some light on that. Are there any further questions for Representative Ellison? I'm finding a lot of people doing the job today, I think, because of the weather, of just presenting their own bills without any support. I'm very grateful I had support here. They probably knew I didn't know enough to present my bill. All right, any further questions? If not, Mr. Ellison, I think we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion and hope that next week maybe we get a chance to talk to somebody from the Academy.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. And that brings us to, we will look at, you've got on the bottom of your list, informational only, forecast adjustments. And so we will go to forecast adjustments. This is something that we do every year. Differences between what was actually needed and the forecast that we had put forth. Okay. Mr. Crow, would you like to just run through this one?
Madam Chair and members of this, Chair Sikora noted the forecast bill is introduced every year to adjust the appropriations we made in the previous session to match the forecast data that is current. So what you see here are amendments to last year's budget bill based on the forecast, based on the February forecast. So each of these appropriations that shows an amended amount is a corrected amount based on usage or pupil counts, for example. In addition, you'll see significant increases in some places in fiscal 2006, particularly if you look at general education on page 1, lines 20 and 21. It goes up from $5.1 billion to $5.8 billion, and that $700 million increase also includes the paying back of the shifts that were automatically paid back with the language and statute when the surpluses occurred in November and in February. So the two shifts, the property tax shift is paid back entirely through the general education appropriation, and then this being the largest appropriation, when we went from 83% to 90-10, a significant additional amount is added to the fiscal 06 general education aid appropriation. There are two articles to this bill. The first article is the K-12 article. If you have questions about particular appropriations, I will be happy to answer them. The bill is actually in the Ways and Means Committee because the second article is the Human Services Forecast Adjustments. And my understanding is that they'll be having a hearing to actually act on this bill, and that's why it's in front of you for informational purposes.
Right, I don't think there's going to be time to get every bill to every committee for formal hearings. So this is an opportunity if there's anything in this. Is there something else in here we should know about? So this was the only real education piece, was the general levy?
No, Madam Chair, Article 1, the entire article going through page...
did you run through all the rest of them?
No, I didn't run through them at all. Page 14.
Okay.
But they're all, as I said, they're all just nothing unique about anything.
Why don't you just glance at them, and if you have any questions about any of them... What is the total cost of this?
Oh, Madam Chair, members, that's a good point. The question is, what's the total cost? The way we budget and the way your targets are set is relative to base appropriations, base being defined as the forecast appropriations. Since this merely implements the forecast appropriations, the tracking cost there is no tracking cost. There's no cost to implementing these changes. There's a procedure in law that allows the Commissioner of Education, if there are excesses in appropriations, to fund appropriations that are deficient. So ultimately, these appropriations would get adjusted. It would just happens over a longer course of time as you have to go to the end of the fiscal year and then make adjustments. This simply puts the forecast appropriations into law, so it doesn't carry a tracking cost.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, while I understand it doesn't carry a tracking cost, the bottom line is there is an increased expenditure to this state. Right? Do you know what that increased expenditure is? Is it is the $700 million the total increase, or is there more?
Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, there are two types of increases that are built into the increases. Now, if you'll notice, some of the appropriations are down, so they're savings. The two types of increases are the shift changes that I mentioned, and the total shift payback between the two forecasts. If you remember, there was a $701 million in November and then an additional $94 million in the February forecast. So there's about $795 million in additional shift payments. And then between the two forecasts, and I'm trying to remember, we actually have forecast adjustments, and education appropriations were up about $30 million, I think, in the February forecast. And
new students? Or?
It related to both the number of students and the type of students, because obviously if we have additional non-English speaking students, they also carry a cost in the LEP program, for example. And Let me just quick look at the Department of Finance for the website for the November forecast information. That'll that'll give us that, then I can answer that one exactly. Take a second to pull it up. It's grinding away.
Pardon?
It's grinding away. It's trying. It really is trying.
Okay, well, his machine is grinding away.
There we go.
If you look in your folder for today, you have the corrected version of the bonding stuff that the committee voted out yesterday. And I just wanted you all to see what the new language looked like and hopefully feel comfortable with it. And, well, I guess that's all.
So, Madam Chair, actually in November, the K-12 education spending was projected to go down $12 million. So in November, they had projected, because of lower pupil counts, that there would be less spending in education. And so if you just look at, in the grand scheme of things, given the $12 billion budget, the variation in spending is only about $20 million up. So it's a relatively insignificant change on that side. The biggest change is the $795 million that in shift paybacks that occurs, and that money is appropriated in statute. There's the statute in 16A that says where surplus funds go actually makes a statutory appropriation. So even if we didn't change Gen Ed to appropriate that money in general education, it's already appropriated. So this merely conforms the Gen Ed appropriation to the statutory appropriation that's in 16A.
Is there anything else? All right. Apparently, St. Peter Public Schools also had a bonding proposal for an early learning center. We did not, as you know, put any money into any early learning centers, but I thought since your superintendent is here, or the chair of the school board, we would allow him to talk briefly about their early learning bonding proposal. And did you have more of these? You have some? Okay. Representative Johnson, perhaps you could introduce your school board chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for this extraordinary, serendipitous opportunity for us to showcase a wonderful idea for creative use of a facility in St. Peter for an expansion of a really wonderful education program that incorporates two universities and colleges in our area. I'd like to introduce the chair of the St. Peter School Board, Terry Morrow, to provide you with the details.
Thank you. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak this morning.
Could you state your name slowly again for the record, please?
I'd be happy to. My name is Terry Morrow, and I am chair of the St. Peter Board of Education. And I'm also chair of the Minnesota Valley Education District, which provides special education for 7 school districts in our area. And we're at a point of opportunity in St. Peter. The city of St. Peter is vacating its current nursing home for a new hospital. We have rising enrollment in St. Peter. We have rising number of special education needs students, autistic students, and students with early language learning, what used to be ESL needs. The city of St. Peter has offered to allow us to renovate the current nursing home to turn it into a laboratory school, where Minnesota State University Mankato would train future teachers in special education and in autism. We would provide lab space for those students. And the Gustavus Adolphus College Department of Education, focusing on ELL teachers, would train future ELL teachers for the state of Minnesota. What we would do is to renovate the nursing home, turn it into an early childhood special education ELL Kindergarten Center. We believe this would be a regional center that builds upon the public-private partnership of a private college, a public university, the City of St. Peter, and the school district. We believe also, as the last page in the package, you had a chance to get an editorial in yesterday's Mankato Free Press, said it perfectly. This plan is a good example of the kind of thinking government needs to do in a do-more-with-less atmosphere. And I believe the editorial is also correct when it says at the bottom it's an example of intergovernmental cooperation and an innovative way to create a win-win situation for our most needy children. Unfortunately, we're in the 13th percentile in terms of property tax in the nation because our two largest employers, the Davidson Office of College and the Regional Treatment Center, are both nonprofits. They do not pay property tax. We just passed a referendum for general operating funds in fall. We don't have an opportunity to even seek a bonding referendum in the time span we have. We have until July of this year. Then the City of St. Peter needs to know either we're moving in, they're selling the building, or they're leveling the building and selling the land. I'll stop there, and again, I appreciate your time.
Questions from the committee? Representative Doran, you look like you're thinking.
Thank goodness.
Both of you are breathing.
Madam Chair, I was thinking of, you know, given the time crunch and the need in this area throughout the state, you know, these kinds of programs and collaborations, if there was any other route, this is a place that is good at, you know, people coming up with a variety of ways of getting something done that is a good thing to do. And that's what I was just sort of, you know, pondering, not necessarily right now today for this committee, but just thinking, how can we do this? So thank you, Madam Chair, for that interpretation of the look on my face.
Representative Bernardi.
I'm not sure that was part of it that I was wanted to ask too, but also I just want to ask about the referendum.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an excess levy referendum, and was it a renewal, or was it truly for excess?
It was truly excess. It was, we had a budget of about $17 million. We had cut about $350,000 a year for the past 4 to 5 years. So this was just to bring us back to even. We had cut from 141 to 125 teachers, and we just were trying to maintain. If we could do this project by paying for it out of general operating funds, we would. As the proposal stands, we still would be paying as a district $1.35 million of the renovation.
And Madam Chair, I just asked a question.
Representative Bernard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just happened to ask the question because a lot of school districts, when they pass it, they really aren't for excess levy. They're just to maintain or to refund. And that happened to you, too. So
that was
that's
us
what
as
I was
well.
Wondering. Yeah.
Any other questions?
By hearing none. I think I will say thank you very much for being here. That's, I think, a pretty creative idea. I can see where a nursing home could be converted into something for early childhood.
The nice thing is that nursing homes have higher safety requirements, so actually we don't have to upgrade the building in terms of safety, which was fortuitous.
Plus you have your kitchen, your dining rooms, and
mm-hmm.
some of those things, exercise rooms, all available already. That's pretty nice. So I think this is a really worthwhile proposal.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
As you did here, we have not in the past funded
mm-hmm.
childhood education centers, and we did not choose to do so this year. We had really so many requests, or some very expensive requests, I guess I should say. But this one sounds like a very interesting idea.
Well, thank you all for your time and thinking about it.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
Okay, Representative Gazelka. They must have beaten you up in that last committee, huh?
No comment.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Gazelka, I will move House File 2778 before the committee for possible consideration in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and
welcome.
We finally just laid it over because we weren't going to get anywhere, and I wanted to get down here. So, this bill deals with the mentoring program that Brainerd has been doing. Brainerd has had a mentoring program for, I believe it's 10 years, mm-hmm. Well before the governor thought that this was a good idea for the state to encourage school systems to have. This particular program won a national award, and one of six awards given, so it's recognized nationwide. It's a program that the Brainerd School System has used to help other school districts. They want to help others succeed, and so they've been doing it naturally. But then as a result of the governor's program, they wanted to highlight this one as one that we should use statewide to fulfill some of the requirements of QCOMP. And so with me today, I've got Loretta, could you pronounce
Norgon.
I don't want to butcher her name, and others from the Brainerd School District. And I want to spend most of the time letting her present this because she's been working with this program from, I believe, the very beginning, or at least close to it.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Welcome, Ms. Norgon. I remember conversations with you on the phone last year.
Yes, thank you. Let me begin by saying that Minnesota schools are leaky buckets. We're facing a crisis. We're losing teachers faster than we can hire them. Teaching has been said to be the only profession that eats its young. The unfortunate traditional approach to supporting new teachers has been, here's your room, here's your key, here's your books, good luck. Our state will lose one-third of its teaching force before 2008. According to Education Week's comparison of state rankings in education spending, Minnesota received a D-plus in efforts to improve teacher quality. Our Minneapolis Trib reported that the low grade came in part because of the lack of ways to judge how new teachers are doing and a lack of professional support and training for new teachers. To exacerbate the issue, poor students, low-performing students, and students of color are far more likely to have teachers who are inexperienced, uncertified, poorly educated, and underperforming. The crisis is created by teacher attrition, the large number of beginning teachers who leave the profession before they can become the kind of high-quality teachers who consistently improve student learning. Research clearly tells us that teacher quality is the single most important factor in student achievement, and that the most effective way to keep quality teachers and ensure their success is through comprehensive induction. So, in Minnesota, do we mandate that every district create from scratch an induction program and figure out how to do it on their own? Most districts do not have the resources to research and create a program to provide effective support for their new teachers. In general, small rural districts do not have the numbers or capacity to be able to offer their own training internally. The weakest programs simply orient new teachers to their schools, providing nothing more than a buddy system. Some offer help from a colleague, while others have trained mentors. Only a few measure the novice teacher's performance against clear standards and expectations. The best programs assess new teachers' performance, link teaching to student achievement through observations and portfolios, are tied to standards, and have implications for certification and continued employment. But individual districts need not create programs on their own. House File 2778 will fund three regional training sites and open the doors of existing successful programs to share their experiences and train new teachers and mentors from schools across the state. Let's talk a bit about dollars. $12,500. That's the cost for every teacher who leaves. $6,200. That's the investment that we lose when only 58% of Minnesota teacher candidates seek or remain in teaching positions. Comprehensive induction is insurance for taxpayers' original investment in teachers' pre-service training. Minnesota has a mixed track record in funding new teacher inductions. From the research and development project that was begun in 1996, seven districts across the state who are no longer funded. Federal dollars are unreliable as well. The current teacher quality enhancement grant will run out as of fall 2006. Minnesota schools are currently expending thousands of dollars per year to attempt to attract and retain teachers. According to a superintendent survey, we use signing bonuses, salary credit for non-teaching experience, retraining, training paraprofessionals, recruiting from alternate programs, aggressive recruiting, temporary licensing, salary credit for higher ed, and placing high-demand teachers above entry level in the salary schedule. Strategies like these add up to major dollars. For the explicit purpose of attracting teachers, without any plan to keep them. The dollars are lost when new teachers resign and leave the district or leave the state or leave the profession entirely. Comprehensive induction is considered the most cost-effective strategy for further developing and retaining new teachers. Research indicates that, compared to teachers receiving no formal support, mentored novices are more effective in their early years of teaching, tend to focus on student learning sooner, and leave teaching at a lower rate. Minnesota could reinvent the wheel with a mandate for comprehensive induction in all districts. The result would possibly be quick fixes, led by inexperienced personnel attempting to invent and provide training and support to new teachers and mentors. However, the situation is far too serious for a quick fix and hastily designed training programs. Minnesota must use its precious resources far more effectively than requiring small districts to create something that already exists. Instead, a much more efficient approach is to identify the successful induction models that already operate in our state and adequately fund those programs to help them open their doors to districts across the state. Minnesota cannot wait any longer. If we're truly concerned about the quality of teaching and learning in our classrooms, it's time for state-funded new teacher induction. If you are simultaneously concerned about student achievement, teacher turnover, and budget constraints, House File 2778 provides solutions. When teachers succeed, students succeed. I'd like to introduce Chris Kelly, who is a mentor in our Brainerd district and a mentor trainer in our district.
Chairman, just interrupt 1 second. Could you tell them what Brainerd's retention ratios for teachers versus the state?
Yes. The state and nation lose approximately 50% of our teachers in the first 5 years of teaching. Brainerd retains 94%.
Madam Chair, members, 79% of school districts in the nation claim to have...
Excuse me, but would you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Chris Kelly, and I am a mentor trainer with the Brainerd School District and also a media specialist in that district also. 79% of school districts in the nation claim to have mentor and induction programs. And of that percentage, only 1% actually have comprehensive, effective programs in place. 99% are hit-or-miss programs with little training offered. Essentially, they're a buddy system. What do we want for our Minnesota teachers? Do we want a hit-or-miss program, or do we want quality, comprehensive programs, which research clearly tells us keeps effective teachers in the classroom? We have effective mentoring programs in Minnesota. House File 2778 will provide funding to enable every school district in the state to access high-quality assistance and training to effectively support their new teachers. I was one of those teachers who, after 5 years, was ready to quit. I had little support, and as a young teacher, I was not always willing to admit my fears or concerns to my other colleagues. Was I an ineffective teacher? I don't believe so. But I know now that I didn't have the reflective skills or the support that I needed to be an effective educator. My students didn't suffer, but I knew that there was much more that I was capable of offering them. It was not until years later when I became involved in the Brainerd Teacher Support System as a mentor that I started to deeply understand teaching and, I believe, become an effective educator. Having been trained and now as a trainer, I know that mentor coaching is a complex process. What appears on the surface to be just a normal conversation is actually very calculated and intentional on the part of the coach. Thorough, effective mentoring training includes many skills: basics of human communication, characteristics of adult learners, generational and gender differences, listening and response skills, paraphrasing and understanding deep structure, effective questioning, planning, reflecting, and problem-solving strategies, cognitive styles, representational systems, which have to do with visual, auditory, or kinesthetic processing styles. Veteran teachers use many strategies and methods to educate students. These techniques do not always or effectively correlate to coaching an adult peer. Comprehensive, effective mentor training is vital for veteran staff who mentor new teachers. House File 2778 will appropriate funds to enable free programs to offer the training to school districts all over the state. I ask for your support for this bill on behalf of our teachers and our students. Thank you.
Ms. Kelly.
Yes.
I assume what happens is maybe somebody from a district gets trained and then trains other people within the district?
Yes, we've actually trained several people who have gone out to their districts and started programs or supported them as they've done that, yes.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions for Ms. Kelly or Ms. Norgon? Representative Klinzing.
Thank you. You mentioned that there need to, in any good mentoring program, there has to be implications for re-employment or continued employment. And I was wondering what this mentoring program provides in terms of that particular factor that should be in any good mentoring program. And then the other question I had is, what percent of your teachers are in their first 5 years right now?
Ms. Norgon, can you answer that?
Madam Chair and your representative, thank you for both questions. The clear distinction that we need to draw in an induction program is to ensure that the induction is about supporting the teacher and that supervision and evaluation is about the role of the administration. The decision to retain a teacher is the administration's, in order to create and maintain a very deep trusting relationship between the mentor and that new teacher. We tell our new teachers that our job is to support you and help you get to the quality where the decision of the administration will be to retain you. Our portfolio process is used as part of the decision. We support and train our teachers in the development of portfolios to document their growth toward standards. It's the administrators who look through and conference with the teachers about their growth and their commitment to long-term professional growth in order to help make that decision about long-term employment. The question about what percentage of our new teachers are in their first 5 years, I don't have that figure for you today, but I would be more than happy to find that for you and email you perhaps.
Representative Klinzing.
Maybe I can get at the question another way then. How many mentors do you have right now, maybe, and how many teachers are they mentoring, maybe, and how long do they mentor the teachers? Is it kind of a career long basis, or is it just for 5 years, 4 years?
Ms. Norgon.
Madam Chair and Representative, our mentors are mentors with a new teacher for their first 3 years with our district. Other districts who receive training from our program might vary that and choose to create their own local model based on their own district needs. Our model is to support our new teachers with an instructional mentor for their first three years. Some of our mentors have been with us since 1996 and continue to have refreshed training, new training, come back. Chris has been a mentor with us since
a long time.
but it's wonderful also to see our new teachers as they become more experienced, to ask, when might I be able to become a mentor to someone else?
Another question, Madam Chair.
Representative Clancy.
Do you have mentors who are not currently working in the classroom but are full-time mentoring teachers, more from a, I don't want to say administrative level, but almost like a teacher on special assignment level?
Mr. Argon.
Madam Chair, Representative, we, all of our mentors are full-time teachers, and we ensure that they're able to handle both roles at a professional level by limiting the number of mentees to two per mentor.
Does that include your mentor trainers?
I'm one of the mentor trainers. I am a teacher on special assignment. 80% of my contract is coordination of this program and training for our district and other districts. I'm not an official mentor in our district. I'm a mentor trainer.
Representative Harris.
Thank you, Chair Sakura. First, a comment. The program at Brainerd is outstanding. I have talked to many who have had an experience. I don't have any in my immediate school district in Princeton, but have visited with those who have been trained by you, and it is absolutely outstanding. My question for you is, you either have submitted your application for QCOMP, or you're in the process of it. Did you incorporate your mentor program into that?
Ms. Norgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Our QCOMP application is in and is unofficially approved as of this week. Yes, our mentor program is part and parcel of that entire package, as it has to be. When we're looking at teacher quality and improving teacher quality, the core of that is the way that we're supporting new teachers. Part of our plan is to expand what we are doing with new teachers and bring part of that quality into all of our teachers.
Representative Gazalka.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, too. One thing I liked about it, but they were already giving it away before anybody thought that this was important. And, you know, so they've developed this over a decade, and it's a little longer, it's a little more expensive, it's a little better, in my opinion. And so that's created some unique difficulties, because if other districts want to get the mentoring component, they can do like continuing ed in any other field, you know, find the cheapest just to get the qualification, versus the Brainerd system is actually doing a very, very good job at this.
All right, are there any further questions? And how about, is Dr. Linda Berger here? And would you like to speak next?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm bringing the perspective today of one who has benefited by training in the Brainerd program. I had 24 years in the classroom in the public schools. I've been in higher education now for 9 years as a professor both in the education and music departments at St. Olaf College. And in addition to that, the music educators in this state have convened a task force on mentoring because of their common concern for our emerging colleagues and the need for support that you've heard about today. And I think that you've already had some questions today about the fruits of the Brainerd program. I can tell you that while I was on sabbatical leave 2 years ago, I had the benefit of completing both the Pathwise assessment training in Brainerd, which is a way of looking at 19 indicators of quality teaching in a classroom, and also the mentor training. And as a result of that, we've been able to apply with our emerging graduates in teacher education many of the processes that become good mentoring strategies. And we've helped to build a bridge between undergraduate education and supporting our new teaching colleagues. One thing that we've noticed is the really strong aspect, I think, of the Brainerd program is the fact that you can actually look at what happens in a classroom, what the teacher says and what the teacher does. But then if you can put on your coaching hat and help that same teacher use his or her own unique gifts and strengths to meet the targets, to meet the outcomes that you're measuring with students. You can make each individual very responsive to their particular situation, to the cultural diversity they might have in front of them, to the different parameters that are around us today. And this has been a very strong program, in my opinion, for helping that happen. We've also had calls this week from the National Office of the Music Education Association, asking things like, what's going on with mentoring in Minnesota? Because they're hearing great things about the coaching part of this. Much of the former research had to do with things like pairing people up properly, making sure they were job alike, and making sure that certain activities happened. But nobody was talking about the actual interaction between the coach and the mentee. And that's what really is the deep quality in this program and what has spun off to affect everything from professional organizations to people in undergraduate education. I think that you'll find that all of the colleges and universities in the state have been impacted to some degree already by the quality of programs like Brainerd, and I've also attended some events in Mankato, which is another site. But we need continued funding, and we need to be able to provide this kind of training and mentorship for all our emerging teachers to keep them in the field. So many young people, I'm excited to say, are choosing teaching because they think of it as a way of living a life of worth and service. But to keep them in that profession and to keep them feeling the satisfaction, we need to provide that support and make sure that they can achieve their full potential for the sake of our kids. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Berger. Are there questions for Ms. Berger? I could just ask you, the other two sites that you're asking for money for, are they as good as Brainerd's?
I don't know.
I don't know any other way to put that. Oh, did I put you on the spot?
I decided to let Loretta just grab a chair.
Madam Chair and members, the three sites are different. The three sites accomplish things in different ways, and I can speak for the Brainerd District with what we have because I know it intimately. I know the other two sites only marginally, and have spoken with the coordinator of the Lake Country Service Co-op only yesterday, the first time ever. The coordinator of the site at Minnesota State University Mankato I know quite well. We've worked together in various capacities for several years, so I know that program somewhat better. But I really dare not speak for either of their programs, and neither of them could be here today.
Does anybody else have a tough question they'd like to ask? Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and Committee, just a comment about Mankato. If Mike Miller comes to my hearing in higher education on the report card, we will ask him about this.
I thought about Mike Miller when I read this. Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much. I have heard very good things about your program. I also have heard good things about your program. And we will lay this over for possible consideration at this time. We don't have a financial target, and you know we aren't real sure the direction we're going, but we will definitely keep your program in mind.
Thank you so much for coming down.
How are the roads? Not too bad? Good.
Thank you.
Seems like that always hits during morning rush hour, which is just such a joy. All right, members, that was our last bill for today. And you'll have a little time before you have to go to session. But let's look at the minutes, please.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
I move approval of the meeting.
Thank you. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? You know, we take such excellent minutes. Thank you, Ms. Detman. There's never any corrections. All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Minutes have been adopted, and I believe this meeting may be adjourned. Oh, wait, just a minute. We have a change of location, right? Tuesday, somebody else has requested this room, and I don't remember exactly the reason why. So we will be in the basement. Same time, but we will be in the basement hearing room. Right?